You're listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks, your source for centered and focused play therapy coaching.
Hi, I'm Dr. Brenna Hicks, the Kid Counselor. This is the Play Therapy Podcast, where you get a masterclass in child-centered play therapy and practical support and application for your work with children and their families. In today's episode, I am answering a question from Bethany in Mississippi, and she reached out and said that because they're in Mississippi, there are many parents with whom they work that still practice corporal punishment, and she's wondering how I would address this. So kind of an interesting question, because not necessarily specifically related to anything in the playroom, but more of a parental support type of question. And we really need to be very aware of our role as a child-centered play therapist. We don't just work with the child, and we can't just isolate our work to what happens in the playroom. We also work with parents, and we have to take on that other role with a different hat, where we become someone who meets with parents and speaks with them and encourages them and supports them and provides resources to them. So this is a very interesting question, Bethany. Thank you for reaching out, especially when we know that there's a pretty common practice in the community in which we live that does not really align with the child-centered model. And so how do we integrate that? How do we make that work? And, you know, how do we manage our own thoughts about that? So this is a very helpful question. And I don't want you to think, you know, if you live somewhere where you really don't know of any corporal punishment consistency, then I don't want you to think, well, this podcast episode really isn't going to be helpful for me. I promise my thoughts will be universal in ways that will help you to support parents and the things that you need to be saying and doing with them when you're having your consultations. So hang in there, even if there's not a whole lot of corporal punishment where you live. So let's dive into some thoughts. And before I get into, I think, my practical application answers, I want to kind of give a broad picture overview, kind of 10,000 foot view, if you will, of what we're doing when we're bringing a family into our work. So, you know, parent, guardian, whomever reaches out, says, I have this issue with my child. You are brought into the fray of their family the moment they become your client. Okay. And one of the things that I talk about a lot in my coaching program is that your child is the client. Unequivocally, when you are a play therapist, your child is the client. However, your customer is the parent. And I don't have time to get into the nuances of that and the details and how we tease that apart, but I just want you to understand, if your only focus and your only work and your only measurement of achievement and success is what happens with you and the child in the playroom, you are sorely missing out on a massive piece of the puzzle, and that is your communication and your support and your work with their parents. So, and again, I don't have time to get into this either, but just to touch on it really quickly, studies consistently show that the more parents are involved, the better the child-centered play therapy outcomes. So we cannot say, well, I'm just going to do really good clinical work in the playroom and think that that's enough. It will be enough, but it is not as good as it could be. So getting parents involved, parents on board, parents bought in, parents supporting the work that you're doing, much, much better outcomes and gains. And that is, of course, what we want, because our job is to advocate on behalf of the child. So here are things that I think you need to keep in mind in terms of how do you balance both sides of that, wearing both hats, right? So number one, parents need to know, like, and trust you. Especially in a scenario like this, Bethany, where this may be a sensitive subject, this may be a touchy subject, this could be a polarizing subject, right? If a parent punishes corporally and you're going to sit down and tell them why they shouldn't do that, that could not be received well. The only way that you have leeway to have hard conversations with parents is if they know, like, and trust you. And that falls on you to spend the time, invest the energy, have the conversations, make yourself available, be friendly, be personable, be kind, be supportive. They have to know, like, and trust you. Nothing will happen if they don't believe that you are someone that they should listen to. So straight out of the gate, they have to know, like, and trust you. I think that's really helpful. Second of all, you have to build a relationship with the parents. And again, it's a unique situation that we're in because we are working with a child who is our client, but this is the only service that I think really exists where our client relationship is not the person actually paying for services. So this is a very unique situation. And so, yes, of course we build relationship with the child, but we also have to build relationship with parents. That is really important for this to work. And then third, everything that you say, everything you do, everything you teach, everything you encourage, everything that exists in any communication with parents has to be filtered and has to be driven by, I deeply care about your child and your family. It's not judgmental. It's not critical. It's not, I have a difference of opinion. It's not, the statistics say. It's not, you should do this because. And all of those things are probably true too. But there is very much an undergirding of, I deeply care about your child. My number one priority is the health and happiness and wellness of your child. That's why you brought me into your family. Because I am uniquely equipped to help your child get where you want them to be. I deeply care about your child, and therefore I deeply care about your family. And this is something that we need to talk about because I care and because I want what's best for all of you. So those are kind of 10,000 foot view things to keep in mind. Because to have a conversation like this, all of those things have to be present. But even to have less contentious conversations, sometimes we have to call parents out. Sometimes we have to say, I wonder if you're aware that when you say that to your child, that this is the outcome that you get. I wonder if you're aware that when you handle a situation that way, your child is likely to do this. Parents need to understand and have some objectivity and some perspective that they contribute to the issues that their children present. And it's easy for a parent to say, like, oh, fix my kid, my kid's the problem. And not all parents are like that. I'm not trying to imply that. But it's easy to say, like, yeah, I just want them in therapy because they're a mess and they need help. But parents need to have ownership. Parents need to have responsibility. Parents need to recognize their contribution to the scenario. And that requires difficult conversations. I actually was just talking about that with my staff this week at the center. We were talking about having transparent, honest conversations with parents. And it takes courage, and it takes boldness, and it takes confidence, and it takes gentleness, and it takes kindness, and it takes all of this stuff. And we really have to hone those skills. We have to make sure that we're bringing that to the table. Because it has to be presented in a way that a parent's going to receive it, or it does no good. So there's your blanket over this whole question, okay? So now let's dive into my three thoughts on because specifically, Bethany, you said, I wonder how you would address this. So this is how I would address this. First and foremost, I think it's really helpful to recognize that more often than not, parents parent the way they were parented. I know that's a lot of parenting in that sentence, but parents will parent the way they were parented more often than not. So most of the time, if you have parents who are yellers, if you have parents who are reactors, if you have parents who are avoiders, if you have parents who spank, if you have parents who cuss, you have parents who slam the door and get in their car and drive away to give themselves a break, whatever behavior you see demonstrated in their parenting approach, it is almost always because that is what they experience as a child from their own parents. That is statistically across the board proven. You typically parent the way you were parented. And then a related commentary is you don't know what you don't know. So when you have parents that are just kind of following in the footsteps of their own parents, and you have parents that just don't know that there are other options, you have what I have termed the parenting prison. So you have parents that are locked inside this parenting prison with a limited set of options. That will help you address this whole issue, Bethany, or any issue that we're facing when we're dealing with parents, right? Because they're not to blame, they're not to be judged, they're not to be criticized, they're not to be made to feel guilty. You don't know what you don't know, and you typically parent the way you were parented. I say those lines to parents all the time. You should too. Normalize and neutralize a tough situation for parents. And if they know, like, and trust you, and if you have a relationship with them, and you've clearly expressed how much you care about them and their child, they will listen. So if you tell them, look, you know, you're probably parenting the way you were parented and you don't know what you don't know, but I can help because I can give you new tools. I can equip you with new skills. I can help you understand a different approach, a different philosophy. That will change everything for them. So I think that's thought number one. Thought number two is your job, among many, as a child-centered play therapist, is to equip parents with effective tools. It is to educate parents about things that they have never learned. It is to evangelize the child-centered model and help them really understand and embrace the entire philosophy. You become a psychoeducator, basically. So when you start working with a child, you then also start working with the parents. And your role when you're interacting with parents is to psychoeducate them. So here's what I would recommend doing in that scenario. Here's why reflecting feelings works. Here's what happens when you yell at a child versus setting a calm, neutral limit. Here's what happens when you spank a child versus giving them a choice to comply within the boundaries that you set. All of a sudden now, it is supportive, it is encouraging, and it is helpful. So you're going to equip, educate, and evangelize. I didn't mean to do that alliteratively. They just happened to all be E's, but I didn't do that on purpose. My pastor does that all the time. Like every sermon, all of the points all start with the same letter, and I give him such grief about that, and I just did it, so I'm so sorry. But we really do have to take on that role of supporting them and teaching them because, again, they're going to parent the way they were parented and they don't know what they don't know. So that falls on us to expand their horizons, expose them to new things, help them understand there are other ways, right? And then finally, you want to share, specifically, Bethany, to address your corporal punishment question, you want to share outcomes and data and statistics on corporal punishment. Not to give them too much, not to overwhelm them, not to bore them with details, not to offend them. None of that is the goal. But what you're wanting to do is to just give them some objectivity and perspective. Several years ago, I was actually interviewed by a local news station. One of the counties in Florida, I think actually several of the counties in Florida, still have corporal punishment as part of their school bylaws. In other words, schools are still legally in some counties in Florida able to use corporal punishment. Not that any of them do, but it, I guess, came out that several counties have never taken that out of their school bylaws. And so I was asked to give some commentary as a child therapist on whether we should allow corporal punishment in schools. And if we did, what would that mean? What would that look like? Are there going to be negative consequences or side effects, et cetera, et cetera? So I was interviewed for the local TV station. And, you know, one of the things that I shared in that interview is statistics show, and there's research galore, data to back this up, that children who are punished corporally tend to be more aggressive. When they get angry, they tend to be more physically violent toward friends and siblings, and they tend to have less emotional regulation. Well, why is that? You know, we have to look at causality, right? Most often, parents spank in anger. Most often, parents spank in reaction. You typically don't see a parent that gives themselves a minute, collects themselves, is calm, is rational, and then goes in and spanks a child. Hardly, if ever, do you see that. Why? Because it's reactive, it's aggressive, it's rooted in emotional upheaval, it's rooted in anger and frustration and intolerance. Well, Children model behavior. Children absorb norms. So if every time a child does something that a parent doesn't like and it ticks them off and they get emotionally dysregulated and the next thing they do, they swat their kid, a child learns when you get angry, you lash out and you're violent and you're aggressive. So even sharing something as simple as that, probably in a more gentle way, because this was more of teaching than I'm actually talking to a parent. So don't take my tone. That was not very kind and gentle. But that information is helpful for a parent, especially if one of the issues that they're having with their children is that they are aggressive or violent or reactive, or, you know, they tend to lash out when they're angry. Well, that's a very easy parallel to draw for a parent. And sometimes parents will complain about other issues like, oh my gosh, my child is just so argumentative and like all he wants to do is argue with me. And then sometimes it's really helpful to say to that parent, well, I wonder if he's observing that behavior from someone in the home. I wonder if he's modeling that behavior from someone. Oh yeah, like every time I'm do blah, 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 I'm always arguing. Okay. So sometimes it's just about helping them see connections, helping them understand the rationale behind the behavior. And data and statistics and outcomes are helpful. So you need to be knowledgeable and aware. You know, don't make statistics up. That's not the point. You need to do some research so that you can come into conversations with helpful information. And again, we have to go back to the blanket, right? They have to know, like, and trust you. You have to have a relationship with them and you have to truly care about them and their children. Those three things exist. A parent can receive lots of difficult dialogue from you. They may not like it. It may not be what they want to hear. They may not immediately take to what you have to say, but it will be okay because they know your intention and they know that your end goal is to make sure that their child is happy and that their family is happy. So Bethany, thank you so much for the question. I think that's so helpful. And I'm hopeful that that will encourage all of us to make sure that we're really doing what we need to do for parents, because we're not just working with kids in the playroom. We are absolutely working with their parents as well. And that requires a whole other skill set that we really have to work on and practice and make ourselves knowledgeable about. So thank you, Bethany, so much. If you would like me to answer a question on a podcast, please reach out, Brenna@thekidcounselor.com. And don't forget, in the nitty-gritty and in the cleaning of the playrooms and in the, you know, mess-making kids that swipe shelves and you spend 4 hours putting all your miniatures back on the sand tray shelves and, you know, they dump your sand tray out and you're sweeping up sand by yourself and you're dealing with emails from parents and emails from schools and all of the nitty-gritty, right? It can sometimes be frustrating, but in the grand scheme of things, that is means to an end, because every single therapeutic hour that we have in a playroom with a child, it is changing that child's life forever. And they will always look back and remember coming and playing with someone who unconditionally loved and accepted them. We can't always change their circumstances. We can't always change their parents. We can't always change what they've been through. We can't always change anything outside of those times in the playroom with us. But for those times in the playroom with us, we have the ability to create an environment that they just know how much they are valued and know how much we care about them. And they become better versions of themselves through that. So don't lose sight of why we do what we do and what we're working toward, even in the midst of sometimes the frustration, the frustrating nitty-gritty details of what we have to do as play therapists. So I'm grateful for every single one of you. Thanks so much for being a part of the Play Therapy Podcast family. We'll talk again soon. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Play Therapy Podcast with Dr. Brenna Hicks. For more episodes and resources, please go to www.playtherapypodcast.com.